Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
You are tuned in to Americana Music Profiles. Thanks for joining us for the second season, brought to you exclusively by Americana Rhythm Music Magazine.
Man, it's people like you that make it possible for us to get out here and enjoy this life.
Thank you for getting in touch with me. I'm so glad you love what we do.
Thank you for your help with everything, Greg. It's a wonderful thing you've got going there.
I'm your host and publisher, Greg Tutwiler. Now let's get to this week's show. Les Boheme says he was part of the great Los Angeles music scare. Well, that sure made me curious. So I sat down with Les to talk to him about that, being a musician in the Los Angeles area, and what he's up to today. He is my guest on the next edition of Americana Music Profiles. So hi, Les. Welcome to the podcast this afternoon. I appreciate you joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So you've been at this entertainment thing for quite a long time.
Yeah, that makes me old, but yes, I have.
I wasn't fishing for old. I was interested in your experience. You've done a lot of different things.
I have. I've bumped from one to the other. I started out playing in bands. I fell into screenwriting because a friend of mine recommended me for a job writing about bands. And bouncing around. I think because I never had a career goal, I've been lucky that way.
Okay. That's the first time that I've heard that that's a good thing, so I'm encouraged by that statement. In some of the press material, there was a statement here that I'm curious about. You said I was part of the great Los Angeles music scare of the early 1980s. What does that mean?
Well, you know, and this has all changed with I think more than anything Uber, but Los Angeles always had trouble maintaining a live music scene. My theory being basically that you couldn't be drunk and get home as easily as you could in New York. You just put your hand up in the air and you're home.
Right.
So we've only had a couple of pockets where live music really meant something here, and that late 70s, early 80s punk slash new wave moment was kind of a heyday for that. I grew up here and came more or less of age in that period. So I was part of the great Los Angeles music scare. we reemerge every few years, and now, you know, I think from the 90s on, we were just a place where people go out and play. But before that, there was the one little 60s pocket when I was a kid. And then there was the 70s, 80s pocket when I was a young man. And then it never quite, you know, sticks.
And you got to enjoy a bit of, I guess we'll use the word commercial success during that season as well, right? With some of the music you were playing?
I did. I mean, it was an unusual little taste. I was in a band called Bates Motel, and we played every club imaginable. Uh-huh. And we couldn't get signed, but we wound up hired by the Mayo Brothers to be their backup band.
Okay.
So the three of us wound up being in Sparks for the early 80s.
Uh-huh.
And we also had our own band at that point called Queenie's Fires, and we had a song called Are You Ready for the Sex Girls, which bizarrely was a hit in Los Angeles while we were in Munich recording with Sparks. So, So my partner David and I were literally out of town for our 15 minutes of fame.
And that,
like, you know, people would call us and hold up the phone and go, listen, you're on the radio.
And that particular song had a brief moment in Revenge of the Nerds, right?
It was in Revenge of the Nerds. It was in another fine film of the early 80s called The Last American Virgin. it shows up, here and there still. I keep waiting for, the hair band cover version of it. It's going to allow me to retire.
Yeah, right.
I think I may have missed that moment.
So how did you go from being a punk rock musician to being a screenwriter? You got to work with Spielberg, I think, too, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. I did a show with Steven Spielberg, I guess, 15 years ago or so. It started, as I said, I was playing in bands, and there was a guy who had been the drummer in my band in college who was now producing movies, and he was producing for Mel Brooks. He produced mm-hmm. The Elephant Man and the Fly, and I was on tour with Sparks in France, and I had just shaved my head for a Gleaming Spires video, which is important to the visual of the story. So my friend Stuart called me and said, there's this company that's got a deal with the Land Company to make a movie about, or with Atlantic Records to make a movie about rock and roll. And I told them that they should speak to you because you're in a band and you speak in complete sentences. And so they flew me back from Paris and they told me their idea and I told them that it sucked and they hired me on the spot because it's something I've never been able to recreate in my life again is high school dating.
Right.
but I was just, I was, there were probably drugs involved, but I was tired and I thought I was a rock star. So, I was being
naughty.
And it worked out really well. so then, oddly, because I had a real attitude going because I had tried to get demos to Atlantic Records probably for 5 years.
Okay.
I came back on open. And they wound up Atlantic wound up signing Sparks. And the script I got paid, Writers Guild scale for the script, which was way more than I was making playing in the band.
Uh-huh.
And the movie never got made. And for the next couple of years, I did both. And, I kept getting hired to write scripts about rock and roll that wouldn't get made. And then at some point, I got a job writing a horror movie because that was the only other job they would give ex-rock and roll guys. And that was Nightmare on Elm Street Part 5.
Right.
And then I sort of looked up and I was writing more than I was playing. And then here I am.
And I'm making a presumption, but you've been writing songs all along, right? During these seasons of your life?
I had a bitter, cranky, music didn't treat me well period where I did, kind of put my guitars away and couldn't listen to much. And then, a few years after that, I heard something I liked and then I was making okay money. So I bought a better guitar. And then I thought, before I die, I would like to be able to finger pick better than I do.
Hmm.
Maybe if I could play a half-assed version of one Mississippi John Hurt song, I'd be happy. And I owe it to the money I spent on this guitar. And then, I never got good enough to do that, but I started, I got better, and then something made me write a song, and then I wrote another one, and then I was like, oh, hold it, I kind of like these songs. And, a lot of my friends are still playing, and my friend Marvin Etzioni, who produced my more recent album, I just kind of went over to his house one day and went, are these songs any good? And he was like, yeah, we should record these.
Yeah.
So we did. And it's you know, it's extremely, I mean, I'm in a very fortunate position that I can, you know, I'm not saying it's my hobby, it's actually what I love doing, but
yeah.
I could do it without it, you know, it sort of being murked up by all my dreams of being famous or,
right.
or being a Beatle or whatever I want to be, depending on the week, you know, so, yeah, but I mean, I'm about to start another one.
Well, along the way, you've had some other artists record your music: Emmylou Harris, Randy Travis, Freddie Fender.
Yeah,
is that so? In your writing, did you write for those folks, or was it just serendipity that they ended up recording some of your music?
It was different every time. I mean, the Freddie Fender cut, that song with a friend of mine. We sent it to. This was like 1970 something. We sent a cassette to a producer, and the guy was cleaning out his Huey Moe, and he was cleaning out his desk 2 years later, and he saw the title and went, "Oh, that's a good title," and put the tape on it. We wound up getting that. Randy Travis and I had mutual friends, and so we wound up writing together.
Okay.
And with Emmy, I knew her vaguely through some other people, and it was when I was doing the show for Steven Spielberg, and I had this song I'd written, and I was just like, you know, would you want to do this? She said, yeah. So, you know, it was different in every case.
And so the moving through the different phases of the entertainment industry, and you find yourself now, I guess the term would be singer-songwriter, is this just where you happen to be now, or is this where you feel like you want to settle in and spend some time at?
Well, I, as much time as anybody will let me.
Yeah.
I've got a kid in college. I've still got to work.
Right, right.
with loftier pursuits, there are, you know, stories I want to tell that are longer than 3 minutes.
Uh-huh.
I'm middle of a novel, but
okay.
You know, I mean, I love doing it. The fact is that for all that I've done, I mean, I consider myself a musician, not a
right. Okay.
In a weird way.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm more comfortable in that world than I am in Hollywood. I mean, I just like it better. So, it feels more honest, and it's what, you know, I that's what I grew up with. So as long as anyone will have me, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And did I understand correctly that this is your first solo record, the one that's out?
Yeah.
And that is moved to Durante. Do I have that right?
Duarte.
Okay.
Duarte.
And so this is, after all of this career, this is your first solo record. How did that come to be?
Who was going to form a band with me? I just have these songs that I really wanted to get them into the world somehow, and so I just started putting them out, and it was like, it's a double album. I figure if you're putting out your first album in your 60s, you're allowed a double album.
Right.
Fair to me.
So you put your first and second out at the same time.
Right. I mean, if somebody really wanted to, they could slice they could buy the CD, they could slice it down the middle, and they could listen to one year and one the next.
Right, okay. So tell me a little bit about the record. Are the stuff that you've acquired over the years of your own music, or did you write specifically for this?
They're all from the last couple of years. I mean, and I think the songs fall into two categories. They're these brutally honest ones. They're all miserable. Let me start off by saying that. I there might be a ray of hope somewhere, but I don't write half the songs. And so half of them are, songs that are just confessional or hopefully relatable in their confessionalness. The other half, I was literally walking down a street in Pasadena, which is in the San Gabriel Valley near where I live, and there was a sign in the window of an abandoned business that said, "Move to Duarte." And Duarte is just sort of nondescript bedroom community in the San Gabriel Valley.
Okay.
But the sign was sad. me, and it made me write a song. And then I just started writing all these story songs about that part of California. And I sort of, you know, something that back in the great Los Angeles music scare, we have a habit in Los Angeles with there are big exceptions to this, like Dave Alvin, who claimed California.
Uh-huh.
But singer-songwriters have a habit of thinking, oh, those Texans, their lives are so much richer and more important than ours. I think I'll try and write those songs, or I'll uh-huh. try and write Nashville's, you know, or it's Bruce and it's all about New Jersey.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's so rarely about where we live.
Huh. Okay.
And I sort of found this spot where I was like, oh, I don't have to try and write a song about something I really know very little about, you know, like
right.
truck stops in Oklahoma, you know, I love songs about truck stops in Oklahoma, but there's no reason for me to write one. So they sort of fell into these two camps. And then as I got more and more into it, I would just drive around the San Gabriel Valley and go, Alhambra. I should have a song about Alhambra too. So I think, you know, I realize people not from this part of the country probably will listen to this record and go, where the what? hopefully it's relatable anyway.
Right. Right.
And in fact, I can't stop. I've got three more that are, you know, the cities I missed in the San Gabriel Valley. I guess we'll have to be an EP.
Right. So what's the when you play this music out, what does that look like for you? Where do you find yourself playing? Do you have a particular methodology of what a tour schedule looks like, or have you approached it from that angle yet?
I've been out of that world for so long. I don't have a clue how to do that. You know, if anybody listening who wants to book me, please. So I wind up, you know, I have a friend with a guitar shop who has shows. I published a novella called Flight 505 about 2 years ago, and
uh-huh.
I did a bunch of bookstore readings for it. And so when they would ask me to read, I would go, and the book's about rock and roll, so I was like, do you mind if I play it too? And so out of that, you know, there's this sort of like little circuit of readings, bookstores, stuff like that I do. And I usually play either by myself or with my friend Marvin, who produced the album, who plays everything and is brilliant. And often with David Kendrick, who was the drummer in Gleaming Spires.
Uh-huh. So this has been out for you how long? When did you release this?
I think it's almost 7-8 months ago now.
Okay.
I mean, it's, you know, that released is such a vague term now, right?
Right. Like, true.
You know, it sort of started creeping out into the world, I guess, would be a better
right. Thing. Okay. And did I understand you correctly to say that you're already kind of working on another one? Is that?
Yeah. I mean, I've got all the songs that I've demoed all the songs and more. And I'm actually going in Friday to put some more vocals on something to
okay.
see if it's better than, if it's more than a demo. And then, I'm sorry, I'm toying with several different ways of doing it. I have friends around the country, and one idea I had was just to show up at various people's houses and do four songs each at, you know,
yeah.
Kansas City, New York, and I don't know where else, Nashville. But but on the other hand, I kind of love the way I was did the last one. You know, I'll figure it out soon.
So if folks want to get the double CD, they want to book you, they want to follow you, want to check in with you, want to figure out how to get in touch, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, the music's out in every single one of the usual places,
right?
You know, and anywhere you get your music, you will find it. Move to Duarte and my name, Les Boheme. My website, Les Boheme's Wonderful World of LesBoheme.com. it's got links to a bunch of my short stories and some other music.
And that's B-O-H-E-M.
H-E-M. I never, ever use my Facebook because it's everything I hate about the modern world. Like it weirds me out every time I or somebody I really don't ever want to see again that I knew when I was 20 shows up. I'm waiting for the adult child I didn't know I had to get
done. Right.
Instagram's moved to Duarte. Twitter's news from Duarte. Facebook's just my name.
Well, I appreciate it, Les. This has been fun, and I enjoyed the history lesson there. Those are some neat things too, and I'm sure the listeners will appreciate it too. I was a student in college in the 80s, and so I recognize the movies and the music that you mentioned, and so it's always fun to connect into that world a little bit. So I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, thanks so much.
Thanks again for tuning in to this episode of Americana Music Profiles. Find us on iTunes at Americana Music Profiles and on the internet at AmericanaRhythm.com.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frunino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune into Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.